You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award winning boutique wealth manager. With me today from Brenthurst Wealth is Sonia Duplessis. You sent me a piece which is, we've talked about the same theme before, Sonia, not just you and I, but myself and your colleagues, some of the common money mistakes. And it doesn't matter how experienced you are, at certain points in your life, as a human being, your frailties come to the fore and you make mistakes. So I suppose you have to keep drumming it into people, particularly your clients, even if they've been with you for a long time.
Yeah. Hello, Lindsay, and hello to your listeners.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you again.
Always.
You know, these things, Lindsay, they sound so straightforward and so blasé and so vanilla, but we get these common mistakes over and over, year after year again. So it's worthwhile repeating it, and it's almost worthwhile getting drilled into the average Joe that's investing his money. But yeah, I would say the first common money mistake that clients do, or that we come across, is not starting to save early enough. And I know we've talked about this many times, but the sooner you can start, really, the better. So if it, from that first paycheck that you receive, even if you're just a student working at a restaurant, try and get into that habit of saving from a very young age. That just would set the tone and would set the base for your savings habits going forward, because it's going to be so difficult at the age of 40, if you haven't saved your whole life, trying to then start that savings habit.
You talk about a student and working at a restaurant or whatever as a delivery person, whatever students do these days. I suppose it's, they're not going to be listening to this podcast. It's not their target podcast. But I suppose it's the responsibility of parents, guardians, friends or older friends or something to say, listen, you're earning X amount, just put 10, 15% away. Because they're not going to do it because they think they're bulletproof. I mean, you and I were bulletproof once, weren't we, Sonia?
Yes, yeah, no, exactly. And I think you touched on it now. It's so important for the moms, the dads, the grannies out there to talk to their children and to talk about money and to talk about just putting, you know, we in the industry, we talk about paying yourself first. So just to put that little bit aside, as silly as it seems, and just try and get your child into the habit of saving. And if they're in that habit, then it will be very easy for them when they get that first paycheck to put that money aside.
Yeah, there's lots of habits that human beings indulge themselves in, and some of them are very bad, but saving is a really, really good one. And is the best way, Sonia, not to have this habit of saving in your head, but actually to do something about it and automate it? In other words, go to your bank and say, right, debit every single month goes into this savings account or whatever it is.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I mean, a debit order makes your life so much easier. And then to put a yearly annual increase on that savings amount. A lot of people, when they come see us and they've decided that they want to save money, they would say, still say, listen, I will let you know when I want that debit order to be increased. And I try and always push for a 10% annual increase, because it just takes the pressure off yourself to try and make that decision in a year's time. And, you know, money, the debit order gets automatically increased and you forget about it. And you can also easily forget about a debit order. So it's not, for example, that you don't want to increase it going forward, your savings amount. It might just be that life is too busy and you forgot about it and you didn't increase it. So your automation, debit order, annual increases are very good tools that you should use.
Very good. Point number three, you say using pension money when switching jobs. That's obviously a mistake. I mean, it must be terribly tempting when you switch jobs. You look at the pension, you say, okay, I'm embarking on a whole new working life now, so let me reward myself and my family and do this, buy that holiday here, etc. Not the right thing to do, I think, Sonia.
Yes, yeah. Lindsay, it's not. And sometimes also, I mean, if you've been working 2-3 years and in your own eyes you think you've only got 50,000 or 100,000 saved up, you think it's little, let me draw it out. But it took you a year or two to get to that savings amount. And it's just going to prolong you having to work and to build up extra savings. So it's never a good idea to draw any of your pension savings. And now these days, with the newly launched retirement two-pot system, there is a cash amount that can be used in case of an emergency, so that can be used. And the two-pot system was launched in the 1st of September this year. So it's still very fresh, very new, but clients or retirees do have access to a small portion of their funds at this stage. And if you change jobs, they will split the retirement savings into a vested component and a non-vested one. So the vested component you still have access to, you can draw it out, but obviously we won't encourage that. You want to try and save that as far as possible.
Quite right. Now, this is an interesting one to me because point number four is going to low risk with investments. And I've had so many discussions with people, both at Brenthurst and elsewhere, that says the conventional wisdom, Sonia, is that as people get older, they should sort of de-risk their portfolio. I mean, you've got to have some money market stuff. You've got to have some cash. So you've got a certain sense of security. But if you'd have gone low risk over the last couple of years with, for example, the US markets, an international fund that Brenthurst is aligned to, you would have lost out if you'd have gone low risk, no matter what age you are.
Yeah, Lindsay, so there's so much that we can say on this, but going too low risk with your funds, firstly, the growth that you're going to get is not going to keep up with inflation. You need equity exposure for your funds that are invested to grow with inflation. We talk about equities being the growth engine or the growth component of any investment, retirement or normal discretionary investment. If you put everything in money market, you've got your fixed 5, 6, 7, 8% in terms of cash that you will get. But if you look at what inflation is in South Africa, you're almost going to break even or not, you're going to move backwards. So inflation is one of the biggest negatives or monsters that you've got to look out for. And then secondly, also tax. So we don't forget, but we don't take in consideration that 6-7% that you're getting on money market is fully taxable. So you can almost deduct 2% of that growth for the tax man. So it doesn't make sense to put everything in money market. But as you mentioned, it does make sense to keep a small portion in cash as a nest egg for money that you're going to use in an emergency.
It's also quite comforting for many people. I mean, I'm old school. I love cash. I like to have cash in my pocket. If I go out and I haven't got cash in my pocket, I feel a bit naked, actually, Sonia, which is a terrifying prospect. Okay, number five, not being involved in your financial affairs. How does it work with you and your clients, Sonia? Do you say, don't worry about it, I'll let you know what's going on? Or do you say, you must be involved and I'm going to call you at your convenience and you must tell me how often I should call you? How does it work with you?
Yeah, so Lindsay, I think it depends on the person. You get some clients that they want to be very much involved, and we have no issue with that. Involved in the sense that, if we want to make a change to the portfolio, the client wants to know exactly why and the reasoning behind it. And then you get the other type of client that will fully trust you, and they actually just they're paying you to do a job and they trust you fully. So, and we don't have issues with dealing with either or of those clients. We do encourage clients to, you must become sort of like financial savvy, try and read a little bit of financial books just to get used to the terms that we use so that you're not fully, not aware of what's going on. So we do encourage that.
Yeah, is you need to generally know what's going on, and you have to know a few things like terms like CPI, which you and I will throw around in articles and on podcasts. You need to know that it means consumer price inflation and what that means for interest rates, etc. You don't need to delve into all. You don't need to be a CFA, but you do need to know a few of the basics. Now, going on to number six, point number six, Don't trust someone else to sort out your financial affairs. And you play the gender card here, Sonia. You say, especially women often rely on their partner to sort out financial affairs. I think that's changing. It's certainly changed since I've been a broadcaster, Sonia.
Yeah. It has changed, but it's still very much dominated by the men in a household. So, you know, the woman, they would tend to leave that to the husband to sort out. But we encourage, you know, if we see a couple or if a male comes and sees us, you know, we would ask if you're in a relationship or married, and then we would sort of like rope in the other party, because it is important to chat about your financial affairs as a whole. You know, we play it by ear almost, because not everyone necessarily wants to include their partner. But what I'm saying, or the point that I'm trying to make here, is if it's a, you know, in a household, the women especially should not just leave everything for the men to sort out. They should be involved if they can be involved. You know, try and have a say and try and see where the money is. Ask the questions about how much life cover is there. Are the wills sorted? So don't just take a back seat. Be involved in the financial affairs of the household.
This is very interesting, and this is just a side issue. And you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, Sonia. But let's say, for example, there's a couple. They've just come into a load of money because he or she has cashed in their pension, and they sit down with you, and there you are, Sonia Duplessis, and you're sitting there. Do you often get a bit of a pushback from the man, because you can see that he's thinking, what does she know? Why am I seeing this young woman? Why am I not seeing somebody, a male who is older?
In terms of me being a female financial advisor, no, I haven't. Maybe because I'm a bit older now, I'm in my middle ages, but I really don't get that anymore. And I suppose if I talk sense, then it's not an issue. So I've never come across that, but I have come across situations where, you know, husband and wife would sit in front of me and the husband would get uncomfortable with the wife asking all these questions. But that's more like that's more a relationship thing. And then, so then we've got to play a little bit of the, you know, psychologist as well. And then sometimes I must come up for the wife. But we try and read the situation, and we try and not get involved in the family financial dynamics, if that makes sense.
But you've obviously picked things up over the years about the dynamics between the couple. That's so fascinating. But it's a whole another podcast on its own. Point number 7, you say, don't trust anyone that wants to sell you a financial product. Do your homework. I mean, maybe people want to sell you a very viable and useful financial product, but today the scamming system worldwide is so sophisticated that you really have to sit down and say, wait a second, I need to do my background on this person, this company that he or she purports to represent. So in other words, don't take anything at face value until you've done some background work.
Yeah. No, definitely, Lindsay. I think you summed it up very well now. I mean, obviously, if it's from a reputable financial company, you know, a bank or a well-known investment company, then you can do it. But if it's a name that's not well-known, do your homework, and do your homework over and over again, and go and ask a financial advisor. I mean, we often get that question, do we know about this, this, and this product? And we would give our honest opinion. And if you decide to go into that product at the end of the day, you know, like we've got now with crypto assets and Bitcoin and things like that, alternative investments, then only put in 5 or 10% of your money in that riskier investment. Don't go and put in your whole life savings. And as stupid as it sounds, people still do that. You know, they would draw out their pension money and put it in funny products. So be aware that the schemes are just going to get more and more and not less. We're moving in an era where, yeah, it's just mind-boggling the amount of schemes out there. Clients should be very careful about that.
Quite right, too. Yeah, always err on the side of caution is what I would say. What about emotions? You've got to, again, I keep on saying this. I say this in so many podcasts with you and your colleagues at Brentest. Human beings are very fragile creatures, and we have emotions. One day you're this, the next day you're that, and because of this and that, that depends on what you're thinking about a particular investment. You might suddenly be rash and say, I want to be in that. I want to be in Bitcoin. Or another day you say, I don't want to be an Anglo-American. Whatever it is, things change. Just sit down for 10 minutes and say, take a deep breath and say, okay, let's have a look at the fundamentals here and get these emotions out of your head.
Yeah. I mean, Lindsay, you have to look at it rationally, and it's easy to, or not easy, but you have to go back to the reasoning why, for example, you took out this specific investment. So if you decided to put money in shares, Anglo, Billiton, Pick and Pay, Woolworths or whatever, and the prices are dropping, you have to go back to the drawing board and just say, okay, Sonia and I sat together. She made me aware that it's an 8 to 10 year investment, so I've got to stick it out. I mean, it's all normal. Clients don't realize it, but it's very normal for markets to drop and to have big drops. It's all part of market cycles. And if you in the beginning, when that investment was taken out, decided on a specific investment term, you have to stick it out. And unless your circumstances changed, so. You know, things change, and if your circumstances change, for example, you've got an illness, a life-threatening illness, then we would say, okay, let's take the money out of the riskier assets and put it into something safer. But you have to get, if you go into an equity-linked investment, you have to get your emotions under control and sort of like sit on your hands when you get uncomfortable.
Speaking of uncomfortable, the last point is makes me very uncomfortable. Not having a will. I mean, the person that dies, and I don't want to be a dispassionate or anything here. I don't want to be nasty. But when you're dead, you don't care. But the mess that you leave behind if you don't have a will. I mean, it takes a long time, I would imagine, to unravel it.
Yeah, Lindsay, it's so stupid that we keep on talking about you need to get a will, but a lot of people, I don't know what the statistics are, but there's a big portion of the population out there that doesn't have a valid will, that's supposed to have a will. I've got a client now, the lady sitting in the UK, and I think we're going on 7 years now because her sister passed away interstate, so without a will, and it's just made her life so complicated. This sister sitting in the UK, and it's really a nightmare if you for your loved ones to try and wrap up your things if you didn't leave a will. So, and a will is something that you literally can sort out within 10 minutes, a basic will. But I think especially now with the holiday season, Christmas season around the corner, it is a good time to sit with your partner, your spouse, if you have one, or just sort it out for yourself. If you want to do one thing before end of the year, sort out your will.
And can you do that in-house at Brentest, or do you outsource it to another company, a will expert, if there is such a thing?
Yeah. So we would automatically ask the question if it's a client of ours that, you know, if you take on a new client, we can assist a client in-house with setting up a will. And I also want to mention the other thing is, Lindsay, is that if you've got a current will, make sure that the executors that you have appointed, you know, that they're reputable. We get so many complaints with people having wills at banks. You know, banks, I don't want to name names, but it's, you know, you have to make sure that the bank will be able to assist your family members. So, we find that financial services companies like ourselves and lawyers companies, they would wrap out an estate much quicker compared to a bank. But we will also, if it's a very complicated will with offshore assets and things a little bit out of our scope, we would refer that will to a a specialist. But yeah, we will definitely be able to assist a client with setting up his or her last will.
Very good. Great points and all well made. And it was an extended chat, Sonia, but very, very relevant indeed. I want to thank you for all your contributions over the year. And I hope you're going to have a really good year end, because every year is difficult. But this year is particularly, I would imagine, been a little bit testing for the wealth management industry. Sonia Duplessis is from Brenthurst Wealth. And that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.